Alexa, pause.
Hello.
Hello there.
Long time no see.
I know.
I feel like I need to reintroduce myself and talk about my likes and my my hang-ups and my habits and all that.
And your voices and all that good stuff.
Which of them? And the ones in my head are the five ones.
Yeah, don't do what the ones in your head said to do, but otherwise. Oh,
you're not fun now, Brandon. Anyways, I've missed you actually.
I know. I saw that you scheduled the next coaching session.
Yes. So that's good. Yes. Our baby's here. I think I told you that, right?
Yes. Yeah. I got pictures and videos. And
yep. Yeah. Okay, great. And then just trying to settle them in because I had a work trip in between. So, and I didn't want to use our time wisely. It was why I, took a while, but I'm back now and we should be back on schedule.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anyways, this is a totally different context. So what questions do you have for me? I want this to be as conversational as possible. And usually we send out questions beforehand, but for you, I'm like, he's got it.
Thanks. Yeah. I was actually mentioning that to Nicole yesterday. I said, I'm going to see Mo tomorrow on her podcast. She goes, what are you going to talk about? I was like, I don't know. And I don't care. And she's like, that would not work for her, right?
Nurture connector. my assistant actually forgot to send the questions out to you. And then the text, I emailed them to you. I was like, where's Brandon's questions? Oh my goodness. If don't bother sending to him. He's going to be fine. But
excellent.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Mo. Welcome to a very special Father's Day edition of the show where we just don't celebrate titles and resumes, but the real stories that shape the men behind them. Today, I have the distinct honor of sitting down with someone who has personally impacted my life, rescuing me from so many things, including what you would call a toxic work environment, and showing me what healthy leadership can look like, especially when it comes to liberating yourself and liberating others. He's a leader, an educator, a clinician, and a coach who has spent over a decade improving health systems, mentoring future pharmacists, and equipping teams with the tools they need to thrive. From his time as executive director of the Dr. Terry Sinclair Health Clinic to now leading transformational leadership training through Abilene Consulting and Giant Worldwide, he brings heart and intentionality to every space he enters. But today we go beyond his impressive resume. We'll explore the foundations of his leadership philosophy, his evolution as a father, and the intersection between personal and professional growth. Whether you're a dad, a leader, or just someone trying to show up better in the world, this episode is for you. So please, everyone, join me with great fervor and excitement to welcome Dr. Brandon Jennings to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. So excited to be here.
Same here. And thanks so much for doing this. So let's start with the basics. I always like to go way back in time. So before the titles and all the accolades, which you've amassed, by the way, congrats on all of that. Who was Brandon and what values would you say has shaped you growing up?
I think, so I've always been a very competitive person. And you know that from my voice. I don't know that I understood that growing up, but it's helped me strive to be better every single day. So I distinctly, now being a dad, I mentioned this to my wife the other day, I can distinctly remember a time in school where I had to do a good job because I was going to get in trouble if I did not. My mom was an educator, right? And I had to bring home good grades. And then there was a moment where it's like, I don't really care what mom says anymore. I want to be better for me. And that's where that takes off. And so I think from a value perspective, competition is really important to me. And I think it's harnessing that into positive instead of getting out of control because it could be quite overbearing.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. As you know, competition is a word that women especially get very scared of talking about because we're not supposed to play that game. Even though we know in this world there's competition, how do you recommend women like me or even just other people in general who might find competition to be a word that is, dirty or not inclusive? How can they lean into their strength to get the best out of life?
Yeah. So from a... I like to say competition can really help drive individuals to achieve things otherwise they would not be able to. And I think in our culture, a lot of times, as you mentioned, it's viewed as negative. I like to spin it. Now I kind of have to, because that's me, right? So there's got to be like something positive that comes out. But I like to spin that to be, I'm willing to take on risks, make decisions that maybe some of my colleagues would not be willing to make. And I don't care gender, race, anything. That's a valuable skill to come in and try to make others better as well as yourself. And so that's kind of where I land on it. But I mean, you're right, Mo, like that people view that as arrogant. People will view that as wanting, I want them to lose.
Yeah,
and nothing's
so I can
further
win.
From the truth.
Yeah. Okay. So how many siblings did you have growing up?
I have one sister.
Okay.
She's
and
younger.
What did you guys grow up? What part of the U.S.?
In Virginia, a town called Fredericksburg.
Okay.
About an hour south of D.C.
Okay. I think one of the things I like about you and working together is just how very, like, you know yourself very well, and you're able to, like, express that, you know, whatever that might be, which I think, if you think about the rhetoric that goes around about, you know, toxic masculinity and all that, what would you say shaped your identity as a man, given we're living in a world right now that what it means to be masculine is threatened on all, you know, aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know really how to explain it. So the first thing is, when I was first exposed to what I teach people now was about 2014, 2015. And up until that point in my career, I don't know that I was incredibly toxic, but it was not effective, like in the way I was leading and doing things. But going forward since that point and trying to recognize who I am as an individual and being comfortable with who I am and how I interact with the world and my shortcomings, which for the first part of my career, I just never wanted to look at. I just shied away from those. But to really embrace our shortcomings really, really help. I think in our country, the main issues that we're running into is that toxic masculinity is coming from a place of wanting to crush others and put others down.
Yeah.
And that's honestly never been me. I've always said I'm not a guy's guy as it is anyway. Like, I've always been uncomfortable in that situation. Yeah. I was putting people down and I didn't even know I was doing it. And I think that's very different than toxic masculinity really pushing people down and you were trying to really stomp on them to get higher.
Especially women, the other set, you know, the other gender specifically, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Were there any father figures growing up or role models that really shaped, you know, who you are today?
Yeah. So my dad is a computer scientist, incredibly analytical. He's never done the five voices. I've never, and I had him do it, but I pretty
really?
Much know that he's a guardian, and so very much by the books. If you know anything about pioneers and guardians, we often will butt heads, and we definitely did in high school and the teenage years.
Yeah.
But just a brilliant man. And definitely a role model for me. And then I call him my uncle. He's a family friend.
Yeah.
He ran an auction business when I was a kid. And I started working for him when I was 13 or 14 and learned the value of hard work and also learned the value of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would do things for him that I would not do for his assistant. And it dawned on me even at that age, like, why? Why was I so willing to work for this individual, but not the other one?
One of the other ones, yeah.
And it was all leadership, and it was his ability to lead the team.
Oh, wow. So you saw that confidence in him, and you were like, okay, I agree with your agenda, given the guardian and pioneer in you. You know,
yes.
Competency.
Absolutely.
Driven. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so it was competency. And then for my uncle, it was his willingness to jump in and do all parts of the job, even if it wasn't his role that day. I mean, he hired me for grunt work to haul stuff and move stuff around. But in the moment, he would jump in and help as needed.
Yeah.
And that really, that dawned today, to this moment, that's how I function. I hire people to help along the way, but I am willing to always jump in and do whatever's necessary.
And that's the one, and that's a very great point you make, because I've run this podcast now for about 7 years, and up until year four, I was running everything from A to Z. But of course, that wasn't sustainable as my other workload got, you know, more and more intense. But I say this to say that if I'm hiring to do a job, know that I'm able to do it, and I know what the end should look like. So, yeah. But being able to fill in for the gaps of a team and not be scared to, like, put your hand in the dirt, as it were, to kind of help make sure that the project runs, I think that's something you're alluding to, and I just thought to expand on that. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the next piece that I've seen you do as well, and what we've been working together on, is when you hire other people, right, they're going to fill in the gaps of your non-dominant hand, my left hand. Like, I'm going to hire people that are really good at being a guardian, because yes, I can do your role, but you're going to do it way better and more efficiently than I ever would. So I'm going to hire that way. I'm going to bring you on my team for that purpose.
For that purpose,
and,
yeah.
And empower everyone to do good work.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, and we're going to get into, like, just the work we've done together, which I'm more than happy to, for you to use me as the before and after, okay?
sounds good.
I think one of the things that you really helped me with was, I used to have issues with delegation, because growing up in Nigeria and growing up being the firstborn and the female, there was a lot of responsibility on my head, and still a lot of responsibility. And it felt like delegation was something that you did when you were weak. But I didn't even know I was getting better at it until you gave me that comment recently, like, good work on that effective delegation. I was like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, I'm actually making some progress. And I see the joy it helps with the team when people feel valued. Like, you see my talent, and you're using it well, and it's contributing to our shared mission. It makes everybody's life easier. But having to take on everything on my own, oh my gosh. Talk
it's
about
so
ineffective leadership.
But you really, you empower others when you appropriately delegate to them, right? They're capable, right? They're competent. They're capable of doing it. And you gave them the resources necessary to succeed.
Yeah.
Like, it really creates a wonderful team environment. So I've seen you do that in the workplace. I've seen it here. Like, all of it's incredibly important. And it's not, you need to do this job that I don't want to do or know how to do. It's quite the opposite. It's, I've hired you to do a job that you're going to do better than me. So please take it and run with it. Occasionally, I do have employees that can do stuff. As you know, I'm not on social media very much. I have employees that help me with social media, and I have no idea what they do.
What that means.
Right?
Yeah.
I give them very broad responsibilities. That's absolutely a job where I'm going to seek an individual who is incredibly competent in that area, knowing that I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that self-awareness is key too. You know, I can't do it all. Like, let me lean on someone else's expertise and give them the,
And why? Why would you?
Right.
I mean, it's right. I know it's ingrained in a lot of us, but I don't know why it's necessary.
Right. Speaking of your social medias, I'm loving your newsletters, by the way. You guys keep them going. I love the music theory. I'm like, here you go, Brandon.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, my assistant Catherine is this. She's a professional actress. Music theater is her primary job. So, she's been sharing her talents. And she's actually the music tutor for my oldest daughter for the piano.
Love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you alluded earlier on about how, when you were younger and your mom being an educator, you did things kind of to please her. But then when you realized that, okay, no, let me just do this to, you know, meet my own goals. So I'm curious to know, what kind of student were you? And were there any early indicators that you would end up in healthcare/leadership work that you're doing right now?
The leadership work, probably not. But in healthcare, so always a really good student.
Everybody says
had
that.
Had good grades. I'm sorry?
Everybody says that.
Everyone said when they're on here that they're a really good student.
Just kidding. There's a running joke among Nigerian parents. Like, I was always first in class. It's like, if everyone was first, I mean, who came last?
Yeah, who was? I was not first in class, but always did well. My uncle actually turned me on to pharmacy. He went to pharmacy school before he decided to be a teacher and then start an auction company. And so even as a young age, he's just like, you should check it out. And so I I did. I very much enjoy helping people. I love helping people reach their full potential, which is basically what I do now. That was in the healthcare arena. This is in the leadership side. I've always taken on leadership roles, and I've always been assigned leadership roles. There's a couple organizations I'm involved with, and I just want to be a member, and I just want to do stuff, and then they're asking me to be a committee chair, or they're asking me to lead this or that. And I think it's from a structural perspective, I'm able to kind of see how those things fit together, and that's my creative brain of kind of piecing all that together. But when I was younger, I didn't know why those things were happening. I think now I have a little better theory as to what's there. So the leadership side of things is kind of just by accident I've landed here.
Yeah, we're glad you're here.
Thanks.
We had a guest on the podcast about 4 episodes ago. His name is Chris. So he studied in Nigeria, and he studied a course that was totally different from what he's currently doing. And he's one of the people who thinks that education, especially the way it's structured back home in Nigeria, doesn't really prepare a lot of students or, you know, younger folks for the reality of the job market. And he said if he could go back again, he would keep getting a degree for him and just go learn the trade that he's currently doing. So I'm curious to know about your own path, given that you start with pharmacy and doing leadership. And I know that there's that intersectionality of pharmacy and leadership. If you could go back in time and reroute yourself and, you know, redirect your course as a way, would you still follow the same path as you did when it comes to your education?
Yes.
Why not?
And I've thought about this a little, not well thought out, but I'll share what I'm thinking. I believe education sets you up to be able to maneuver in the direction that you want. So yeah, you're exactly right. I'm not using clinical pharmacy skills every day anymore. But the ability to learn those and the process in which I learn is applied over here, and my engagement with patients is now engagement with coaching clients. It's really no different. I desperately want for you to be the best version of you, whether you have diabetes and I was helping you there, or whether you're leading a team and you want to get better. So to me, it's all, I would absolutely do that again. I would likely go be a family physician instead.
Why? Really?
I know, right? There's pieces of primary care that as a pharmacist, there's some limitations on what you're doing, and it would have been nicer to be a physician. But ironically, I would be in the exact same spot I am now, because I likely would not still be practicing with the current climate of what family practice looks like. So my path actually might turn out to be exactly the same. I met my wife in pharmacy school, though, so maybe we wouldn't have met. But
right. And those two lovely kids of yours, you know.
That's right. So it all happens for a reason.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. So let's talk a little bit about your career pathway, right? You've done it all. You've done hospital. You've led a team in a clinic. You've also spent a considerable amount of time in academia. How did you decide to, how did you decide to start with whatever you started with? And how would you say all of those experiences have shaped what you currently do, especially your perspective on leadership?
Yeah. So when I, one of my mentors, her name is Amy Whitaker Rudinko. She unfortunately passed away at a very young age of breast cancer. I was in, even before pharmacy school, I think I was in undergrad, I was working at CVS Pharmacy as a technician on the weekends, picking up shifts. And she happened to come through one day picking up a Saturday shift. And I worked with her. And from that moment on, all I ever wanted to be was Amy. That really just shaped what I did. So my career path within pharmacy and pharmacy education, all I ever wanted to be was Amy. And that's what I became.
What's special about her?
Just an incredible woman. Competent, right? Important to me. Incredibly competent.
chemistry is competency.
A trailblazer. Just a wonderful role model. Compassion when needed, strong hand when needed, relatable. So that's all I ever wanted to be. And honestly, to this day, still strive to do that. I'm not in the exact same spot. And even though we've lost her 10 years ago, I still think about her every day and strive to be that type of leader. And so that absolutely shaped kind of my direction and why I went into academia. So my role was always split 50-50, roughly 50% teaching, 50% practice. That really excites me because I get incredibly bored doing the same thing over and over.
Right.
And so that really worked. And that was, I was able to do a lot of different things. And honestly, that's what helps me do what I do now, because all I did every day was problem solve. It's as simple as problem solving staffing issues, all the way up to problem solving really complex issues, like how are we going to serve the underserved in our community with absolutely no money to do so.
Hmm. I'll talk about that in a little bit. As we were talking about Amy, make sure you keep resting in peace, by the way, and you talked about compassion, I'm like, she's definitely not a pioneer.
I don't think she was. I think a really strong, I think connector was in there. I think connector and nurturer probably with some creative thrown in, but I don't know.
Brandon, that was supposed to be a joke. You weren't explaining it.
I kept explaining.
So I know for our listeners, we've been talking about voices, and trust me, it's not the voices in your head. So Brandon, you introduced me to the Jan 5 Voices framework, and honestly, it's been a game changer. For those who've never heard of it or who've struggled to find their voice in professional or personal space, how would you describe its core purpose, and why do you think it's such a powerful tool for self-awareness and team transformation?
It's powerful because it's simple and easy to utilize. 5 Voices takes the Myers-Briggs type, which are 16 different personality types, and boils them down into 5. And those 5 become very easy to understand and relate to. And you have 2 or 3 as your dominants, and those are easy to know because that's you. And then the other 2 are easy to remember because there's not 15 other things you have to remember. It's just 2. And so it really is a game changer. And, you know, all of us say that, right? And I'm in this business, so it's like, yeah, it's life changing. And sure it is. Yeah, you just want to make a sale. No, it changed the way I lead, the way I interact with my colleagues and my partner and my kids, all of it. It's incredibly important. So it's incredibly powerful across the board. Most of my clients will say it's more helpful at home than it is in the workplace. And it's incredibly helpful in the workplace. So
that is so great. And what was it about you what was it about Giant, you know, that really stood out for you? Because there are several leadership institutes, you know, out there. So what drew you to the Giant framework in particular?
I was introduced to it at a key time. I was really struggling to lead my teams. I knew I was capable, but I would often leave them behind because they either weren't moving fast enough for me, or frankly, I didn't even know I left them behind. I'd just turn around and no one was there. And it was just a key moment. A colleague of mine introduced me to it. He was getting into teaching this. And it just resonated from that point forward because it was so easy. And it explained why I was acting the way I was acting, because it was unconscious, right? I wasn't intentionally doing anything. I was just being me. And as soon as it became conscious to me, I could be more intentional. That being said, I screw it up all the time. And I teach this all the time. And I could tell Mo something today where I see it. It's like, oh, let's make this tweak. And then I get off the call and I do the exact same thing I just told Mo to tweak from, and I don't see it in myself. I need someone else to see it. So it's constant trying to get better every day. But it's relatable. It's easy. And there's some true meat behind it.
Right.
I find all these really interesting. You can go to a conference and you learn some stuff, and it's interesting. It just doesn't have the stay power that I found with Giant, and that's why we continue to use that platform.
So thanks for sharing that, by the way. And I definitely agree with the 5 voices. For the Myers-Briggs, a lot of the details were lost to me because I always remember what my numbers were, but what does it mean? You know, as far as what does it mean to even be me, and then to be on the other side of me, and how can I even liberate myself and others? That was lost. And I felt like Giant as a whole really fueled the 5 voices, you know, filled that hole for me. And I just wanted to emphasize that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm an ISTJ, but when you're not an ISTJ, I don't know what to do with you.
Right. And that's your pioneer talking, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
How does it feel to be profiled on the other side, being on the other side of me today? I feel so excited, actually.
This is awesome. I know. I feel like I need to confess all my my pioneer my badness.
Where's my couch? So you've done a lot of work with men, and because we are talking about men for this month's theme and finding ways to just really help our men, the men in our lives. So you've done a lot of work with men, especially helping them better understand themselves, you know, their leadership styles, or even how to show up more fully in their personal lives. Now, in a world that often teaches men to lead from control, like we've talked about the whole toxic masculinity and, you know, coming off as being the loudest but not necessarily the smartest in the room. So in a world that often teaches men to lead from control or even silence their emotions, these are like two extremes. Mm-hmm. How do you create spaces where men feel safe enough to lead from wholeness? And I'm really curious to know that because I have a lot of men that I care about in my life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Feelings are okay. And Giant kind of taught me that. I was never very good at that early in my career, but I always just thought feelings were like, that's just something you have to get over. And then we'll keep working towards whatever our goal was, to succeed. But what I've learned along the way and what I share with all my clients is that feelings are a huge component of that. And for the majority of the population, that is how they are approaching things. So I always like to say, what do you think about this? But to a feeler, I should be asking, how do you feel about this? I'm actually going to get the same answer back. I'm going to get what I need to then take it to the next spot. But if I ask, Mo, what do you think about this? I may not get your true answer because you don't know how you think about it yet because we haven't thought about it yet. But you know how you feel about it, and you can share that with me. Mm-hmm. And so I really try to empower all that I interact with to really embrace that. And coming from a pioneer, it's weird talk, right? To embrace those feelings. But that's what I need to do to truly connect with the individual on the other side of me. Ultimately, if my goal is to succeed, it's to win, I'm going to do that by valuing your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I'm tired, hungry, frustrated, angry, I'm less likely to get in touch with my feeling side, right? I'm quick to bulldoze. I'm quick to move on to the next thing. But if I can get to a place of peace, I can appreciate where you're coming from the feeling side.
Yeah.
Hmm. So feelings are okay. And I think that's, I don't know, they're quite powerful. Unfortunately, in our culture, it's viewed as,
it's,
you know,
opposite,
weakness.
Weakness,
and,
yeah.
And why do men don't cry? It's like, absolutely, I cry. Are you kidding? Mm-hmm. I have two daughters. I cry all the time. Like, that's what you do.
All right. Because we're also, and thanks for that, by the way. I just love your emphasis on that. You know, feelings are okay, and helping people just, you know, feel unstuck. That's a good reminder. What would you say some of the most common struggles you see men face when it comes to leadership or even emotional intelligence?
So gender-wise, we find there's less nurturers that are men, but the rest of the voices, there's really no delineation across the way. It's another level down. We have to talk about voice specifically as it relates to the individual, even more so than gender. Getting in touch with feelings for a pioneer, for a creative, is really difficult to do. And I don't care what gender you are, right? That's just incredibly difficult. Being a pioneer woman is very difficult in this country because you're strong and you're moving. As you state things in a very loud manner, it's very difficult for everyone to accept that if for some reason in this culture. And so they often end up fighting back. And so I often, from an emotional intelligence perspective, my strategy for working through a problem is I often talk on top of you until the point that you prove me
competent.
You prove to me you have a better plan than I do.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh yeah, that's better. Let's do that. But in the meantime, I'm yelling at you. And everyone's climbing under the table because it's really uncomfortable. So the emotional intelligence side is, okay, that's the way I function. So how can I take a step back and work through compromise in not such an aggressive way? Mm. And what does that look like? Because the person on the other side of me needs to know I'm in it for them as well, even though it feels like I'm only in it for me.
Yeah.
Now that's speaking from the pioneer side. Mm-hmm. When I give the Five Voices presentation, I often mention this, only 7% of the population's pioneers.
Pioneers, yeah.
But they're way overrepresented in C-suites workers,
yeah.
and in leadership positions leadership. Around the country.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the really loud individual is valued as a leader. And the nurturer is like, oh, I want to be like that. And nothing is further from the truth. Mm. Like, you do not. That's not valuable leadership. And even though I have ideas and strategy and I can lay it out for you, I can't get it done. That's not my strength.
Yeah.
I need other on my team to help me get that done. I really have the pie in the sky idea. And so that's just me and a subset of this voice, but every voice has to do that regardless of gender.
Yeah.
Men don't often think about this stuff though. We're not valued. We're not taught to think about this coming up. And it's not my dad said, don't think about this. It just never popped up. We never talked about it from a feelings perspective. I think that's kind of a lost piece within the male gender. It could be a lot better.
Wow. That's profound. Thanks for sharing that. And I just love how you balanced it out. Like, you know, gender across board, these traits are similar, but for men in particular, you know, they aren't given the permission to be themselves or express emotions. And that can, you know, be quite problematic along the way.
It's tough.
Yeah. Hmm. Can you share a breakthrough moment you witnessed in a man's journey through your coaching where something maybe clicked and they showed up differently?
Let me think of a... Are you looking for in a client or from me?
It could be any. Again, we're focused on men, so whatever would be a good example to share with the listeners, yeah.
I was working with... a male who working in the healthcare industry. He is a nurture connector and incredibly feelings oriented. His boss was a really strong guardian. So very much by the books, want the details. And the most important piece of that dynamic is the direct supervisor wants output, chemistry connection, not something that was necessary. To the employee, my clients, that chemistry was incredibly important for him to ultimately succeed, right? He needs that chemistry. He needs to feel valued. He needs to feel that connection with his supervisor to be able to succeed. The relationship was going miserably, which is why he hired me. Coming in and just analyzing it, it took a few sessions, but to just state it just like we just stated it, the light bulb goes off. Then when we had discussions about where is the right fit for you, it was a very objective conversation, not a place of feeling bad. And it was so obvious to him at that moment. It's like, yeah, this doesn't fit for me right now. And it's all because of the supervisor in that moment. And the supervisor isn't necessarily doing anything wrong. They're being themselves.
Yeah.
But not as emotionally intelligent as the employee wanted in that moment. And he determined it just wasn't the right fit. And so moving to find the next thing on his terms was much more empowering than having to say, I just quit. I hate this. This is horrible.
Yeah.
Right. So he was able to kind of streamline that process and gracefully move into a role that's a much better fit for him now.
Wow. Yay.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And one of the strengths that I think Nicole, my colleague, and I often work through with clients is we make it as objective as possible. When you think of leaving a job, especially those that are feelings oriented and really feel connected to that job, it becomes almost too burdensome to think about leaving because of all of the people side of it.
Right.
And so one of the ways we come in and chat about it is a much more objective angle. And when you start to open up the door to say, hey, is this the right fit? Just answer that. Is this the right fit for you? And saying no opens up a door over here. And that door is the same as every other door. Let's explore it and look and see what's there. Mm-hmm. It becomes really empowering to say, yeah, I got this. I can do this. I can do that.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely.
A follow-up to that would be for men listening to this who might feel stuck or even unsure of their place in the world, what's the first practical step you'd encourage them to take?
Know yourself first.
How can you do that, Brandon?
You know yourself by doing everything we've just been talking about.
Right.
To go through. So making sure you know what your voices are, you know the strengths, and you start to identify what your tendencies are as you engage with people around you. The more I know about that, the more I can make conscious decisions. And I don't want it to sound like it's always perfect. Right. I would say the majority of the time I still screw it up, but it I'm doesn't. At least aware of it. Right.
Yeah,
and that's why I'm in therapy. That's why I do this for a living. It's constantly trying to improve and understand who I am and why I reacted the way I reacted. And I think that's our main issue. If we are in autopilot doing the same thing we've always done, you're going to stay stuck. Why would you change? How is it magically going to change?
Yeah.
So we've got to find the way out of those pieces. And I would just look inwards because you honestly can't control the people on the outside of you.
No.
My example could not control the supervisor.
Right.
In that scenario, it is up to the person to take ownership. And it would be really cool if the supervisor also changed over time.
Yeah.
But that's a bonus. That's not something you can control.
Okay. Thank you. I think one of the things I'd like to just add to that, and it could also be a follow-up question, is just your ability to meet people where they are. Because I came to you just so many things to iron out, and just playing out this layout one-on-one and helping me see, you know, the potential I had, you know, in me, what I could work on, and then even just liberating myself to liberate others. So I'm living proof of just your ability to work with people from all walks of life, which is why, you know, you're coming very handy. I recommend you a lot of times, and I keep saying, if you keep sneezing a lot, because I talk about you. Now, how do you approach working with individuals from, you know, different cultural, racial, or professional backgrounds in a way that honors their voices and, you know, help them thrive? How do you do that?
I think voices are the great equalizer. I don't care where you came from and what's happening. You being the voice you are explains things. And so what I often find myself doing is doing some significant time in exploration and chatting with anyone I meet new, especially in the coaching situation, to really understand where they're coming from. But I have hints. I sort of know how you engage with the world just based on your voice. What I have to do is then meet with you to better understand the nuances and truly, like, was that accurate? The way I assume that most voices are handling things, is that accurate with you? And so what I find, though, is we're able to build connection through that process. Because as I say things that resonate with you, you feel heard in that moment because you are, right? And that gives me a little bit of competency with you, some positive currency to say, like, okay, he gets that. So now that he knows that, how do I fix it? And we start talking about those things. I will say, just, and this is probably my creative side of me, I am really good at finding the problem, seeing what the problem is and developing the path to get there. It's why I taught for so many years. Developing curricula is not difficult for me. It's not a whole lot different than when we meet. And I think you're right on, Mo. I don't, all walks of life, and I don't care your issues. We can likely figure them out and solve them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, is it going to be 3 sessions or 8 sessions or
probably
7 years?
Like me.
Yes. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
There's
always
things to work on. So if anyone's ever been in therapy, honestly, it's very similar, right?
Yeah,
that's what you're doing with your therapist
as
you go through. So you're trying to build that trust along the way. Now, Mo knows this, your listeners probably don't, but, you know, I am so competency driven that I'm always going to try to demonstrate my competency and what I know with the
even
person
if you
on the
don't
other
ask
side.
For it, yeah.
Even if you don't want it, Mo is on the other side, really looking to connect and
chemistry.
Assessing my character and seeing if we have chemistry to truly trust. So I have to remember that it's a fine balance of how much do I really know and share in the moment to gain trust versus how much do I connect.
Yeah, Yeah.
To have trust. And so Mo's the opposite of me. Nicole's the opposite of me, which is, it's interesting, right? That's how we gain trust.
But it shows that you can work with people regardless of their voices, right? And absolutely. Which brings me to my my concluding point in this is that, so when I ask Brandon that question and he goes, I don't care where you're from, voices are an equalizer. He does care, you know, and I know him well enough now to say that when he says things like that, it means that come as you are. And I also want to add this to him, even though, yeah, he said voices are an equalizer, I would say that there were some cultural elements that came with, you know, my own situation. He was able to listen and he carried that through all of our conversations, knowing that when I explain things this way or I seem bothered by something that he doesn't have a clue to, he knows where it's coming from. So I know he cares. That's what he means by he doesn't care, but he
absolutely
cares.
Absolutely. And I need like Mo with me all the time to translate as I go along. I have I would say even the last 2 years, I've really tried to focus on when I say I don't care, it doesn't mean it's not important.
Yeah.
That's the first component. Cause I will be talking to a colleague and be like, well, I don't care how you do this. That makes it sound like it's like not important. It's like, no, I'm empowering you because you're really good at what you do. It's going to be awesome. However, it turns out I'm happy with, mm-hmm. but it's important. Right. So that's like the first piece of the, I don't care. The second piece is, I absolutely care about your success. That's why I invest so much in you. I feel back to your questions about education and why to go about doing it the way I did it. That brings something to the table. No, I do not know what it's like to be a Nigerian woman in the United States. Like, how would I ever know that? And my perspective comes from a white male, but I know it's a different experience.
Yeah.
I know it's different, so let's explore it and find where it's different, and we have those discussions. And there's times that most like that doesn't apply because I'm not a white man.
Yeah.
Noted.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how to rephrase that where you're comfortable in being able to do that. So I have a general working knowledge of a lot of things, but I can't be a Nigerian woman. I can't be a black man. I can't. It's not there, but I need to recognize that that is different and not just assume that it's not and la 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 la, not be thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's so spot on because I find that in talking to some of my mentors who are different from me in the sense of, you know, being white male and older and, you know, more senior, when they give me suggestions or tell me things to do, I have to always to remember that, okay, I know they mean well, but this isn't going to be helpful for me because I don't have the look or the prestige
exactly.
to like walk into that room. So, but I know that they mean well, you know, so.
Absolutely. Right. But it's not a one size fits all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Component. And just because it worked for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you. So we have to explore that. This is where my training comes in. I use my colleagues a lot to mm-hmm. be thinking about these things as well. It's like, what am I missing as the nurturer's going into the room? What am I missing from this perspective?
Yeah.
And I use Nicole for that. I use other colleagues for that to be able to kind of share. So over time, I can start to see that. But I've had so many clients over the years too that, you know, Mo, you said I could use it as an example. I never fully say who you are, but you are an example because other people really get power from knowing the successes you've had, just like you're gaining from my previous clients when I talk to you.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good to know because it also shows that regardless of where we are from or these issues are, you know, similar across board, but how do we, you know, support one another, right?
It's all universal. So, and I think Mo has sent multiple Nigerian ladies to me and we've had wonderful experiences.
Right,
I think you should have them on, but yes.
Yes. And hopefully with this episode, we'll do that towards the end where we can have people, how they can reach out to you. And I know you had provided that practical tip of doing their voices. So whatever link you can send for them to get that done. So that way, because I highly recommend you. I always go back to that session. It was a group. So I signed up for, how did I even meet Brandon? I forgot this critical part. Shout out to Dr. Jamie Wagner. Jamie.
That's it.
Was my mentor. He is my mentor that was assigned to me through AACP. And I love her so much that I decided to just keep her. I was like, you know, I'm not going back in again. This is it. And I remember just talking to Jamie about some of the things I was going through at work. And she was like, you know what? I think you're going to benefit from a leadership stuff with Brandon. And, you know, when you hear about coaches and all of that, it kind of sounds very nebulous. Like, this is going to be very effective. Like, trust me. And because I already had that, you know, chemistry and character chemistry going with Jamie, I could believe that she had the best in it for me. So I reached out to you, and it was a boot camp group session. And what I loved about that, you had different voices, and it helped to see. And it was a Zoom session. It was Zoom sessions. Everyone's name had their voices. I get two dominant voices on there, and knowing that whenever they said something or shared something, I could relate. Oh, okay, I can see how this is your perspective and why it's different from another person's
Powerful.
perspective. But then things came to a head that time in June of 2022. I cannot forget when I came boiling, you know. And I would never forget that moment for me, because up until that time, attending the program was just almost like, let me hear what everyone else is going through and what I could take from it. But I never really had anything concrete as a problem to like work with, because a lot of things were still forming. But when things came to a head at work, and I came just crying, and I remember just bawling in the session, and how you all just, you know, surrounded me and provided just that support, and then you followed up, Brandon. You always say you don't care, but you cared.
Oh
I
my gosh,
remember I
yes, I
was in
care.
Connecticut, and I was in my hotel room. You know, we spoke at night, and you just, you know, that for me was, I felt like, wow, what a heart and what a leader. So thank you, because that for me was a critical turning point. It really changed my life, and it's the work I still keep doing till today, and even in how I lead others, you know, providing that freedom and liberation for them to be their better self. But how can we, you know, create that environment? So thank you for the work you do.
No,
And so
thanks.
I like to, you know, replicate that to people, because I know that a lot of us feel very stuck in our workplaces or even in our processes. Even though I keep talking about work a lot, the work I do with Brandon has also helped me in my personal life, in my relationship with my spouse, with my family members, with my child. And, you know, so as a person, you carry so much with you. The touch points you have, you're not just a worker, you're also a person. You have other, you know, areas of your life, and this work is gonna, so it's something that will revolutionize your whole life. So I just wanted to put that there. But we're gonna talk
Well,
about how
thank
people
you.
can find you
Yeah,
and all
that's
of
so
that.
nice.
yeah
Thank
yeah
you.
all right,
That means a lot hearing that, so thank you.
of course. I think I've shared this with you before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I want to put it on the you know, for posterity's sake, you know, forever sealed in the hallowed walls of podcast, so that way we never forget.
There you go. Thank you.
So as we round off, I want to talk about fatherhood, because this is the Father's Day theme, you know. So you have two kids, you
I
know.
do.
What would you say is one lesson your kids have taught you that you didn't expect?
Oh my gosh. Raising a teenager's heart. Let's just start there. But what motivates them is the challenging piece. Like, that's what I struggle with every single day. Because I'm motivated so differently than my oldest. And my oldest is the complete opposite of me. And so we're butting heads all because I'm trying to get the best out of her. And she's only seeing it as this father just telling her what to do constantly, right? And then my youngest is just like me, so then we butt heads because we both want to be right.
Similar, yeah.
Yeah, so
Was it the one you play golf with and you never let her win?
that's right. But she won once. So I think that piece is what I've been struggling with so much, of how do I reach them and not be so overbearing, but truly connect. And again, the connection for me looks different than a feeling connection for other people, and really understanding that. And as a teenager, how would you ever know that? Right. And that's the challenge. So there's days you just feel like an absolute failure, and you're like, I'm ruining all of this, and it's not working. And as all parents feel, I'm sure, at least the ones I talk to. And I think that humility is a piece that I never knew was coming from parenthood, that's absolutely there pretty much every day.
Thank you for that. Speaking of podcasting, right? Let's say your kids are hosting a podcast in 20 years. What's one story or trait you hope they share about you?
oh gosh. I think it would be, okay, hold up. Let me clarify. I hope that they tell me, or what will they really tell you?
I think the latter will be more of the more interesting response, right?
So we have a running joke that I am always right because I don't speak unless I know what I'm talking about. So that comes into play. But there was a day, it was a couple years ago, where I was incorrect twice in the same day. And it was something, I don't even remember what the content was, but I had to record it on the phone and they had a recording and I had to admit that I was wrong twice in one day.
Like a clock. The opposite of a clock.
So I hope that I hope that that's what they will share going forward, because I think that was a memorable moment.
Yeah. So. Okay, that's very neat. I like that. So you're a family man as well. You've talked about your kids, but then your wife is also an integral part of your life. Which of your work would you say keeps showing up over and over again? Like the work you do on yourself, which of them really shows up over and over again in your family life?
Yeah, so what we find in our circles are most of the time you're seeking and you end up with a mate that is the opposite of you, and I'm no different.
Why do we always have that though? You know,
I don't know. Like, and I should probably verify this somewhere. I'm sure there's some research somewhere, like we're seeking out what completes us, but we don't know that we're doing, I don't know. That seems reasonable.
Yeah.
But my wife's a nurture guardian, and I always say she's a nurturer with the kids, but a guardian with me. And so what I keep working on is preparing for conversations with her different than I would with another pioneer, because her approach is going to be very different because she's not a pioneer. And so, I always, and I mentioned this in my talks, like I prep. So like if I have an idea of where to go on vacation and, you know, I work from home and she gets home and I'm like, all right, I'm ready. And she's going to ask me about this and she's going to ask me about that. And I'm going to be ready. And then she shows up and I'm like, I think we should do this. And then she asked me a question that I didn't prep for because I don't think that way.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of slump back into my office and get back to work of trying to answer all the questions that she's going to have. I think that's the piece that comes in. As a pioneer, I don't like all those questions. And it's really leaning into embracing that, because honestly, I mean, I know this is a stupid example, but the vacation will be better. But the questions she's asking are important. They need to be vetted. I just would rather make the decision to move on. So we have to mold those two together. And most of my work that I do every day in helping others, I think about my wife all the time, because it's seeing the different effects. The opposite of my voice. Absolutely. How do we engage?
Yeah. Oh, that thing you always say, what's it like to be on the other side of me?
Yeah. Right. And it can be quite powerful, right?
Yeah.
To be thinking that way. And I can be quite powerful as I continue to state my mind. So.
What would you say are some of your proudest moments as a dad or even as a husband?
I have two amazing kids that honestly, I'm proud of them every day. My oldest, I never knew that she would want to do this, but she likes music theater and acting. And so she was just in a show of Frozen Junior here at a local youth company.
Cute.
And so she was middle Elsa, so the teenage Elsa of Frozen. And I think I probably teared up 3 or 4 times during the show just watching her on stage. She's very different than other actors I know. She likes acting because she can be anyone on stage and she doesn't have to be herself. And that's so different.
That's
like when I'm up on stage, I'll talk to a group of 5,000 people and I have no issue with that because I'm me, but make me act and do what she does. I hate that. I cannot do that. Don't make me follow a script and don't make me be someone else. So it's so different. Yet we both get up in front of audiences. So that's kind of neat. And I think as a husband, like we have a very supportive and equal relationship. And I think that's really, really important. I value the women in my life. They're incredibly important. And I'm really, having two daughters, women's rights are incredibly important to me.
Amen.
And how women are perceived in this country is really, really important. But we've been married for almost 20 years. Wow. Proud of that. So
Congrats.
Created
you're doing something right.
Ourselves.
You say you don't care. You're doing something real right.
We're doing something right.
Yeah, some days. Yeah.
Enough of those days.
Yeah. So fatherhood has many seasons. What season would you say you're currently in and how are you navigating it?
What season?
Yeah, I know you have a teenager to like contend with. So
yes, I call it the Uber phase. So all I do is cart them around to the various
Daisy.
That's it. And it's my wife runs a really busy pharmacy. And so it's really just making sure that there is a driving adult available when the moment is necessary.
Yeah.
So like right now, my youngest is getting ready for her school play. So my oldest had to walk her over for call. So coming back, it's just like it's a village, right? To do all these. So that's the season I'm in now and having teenage daughters.
Okay.
You know, one's a teenager and the other's coming. So.
Good luck with that. Mm-hmm. Just keep remembering those tips that work because I might be reaching out to you in the next 10 years.
I don't know that anything's worked yet, but I'm trying.
Okay, lastly on this block would be, what advice would you offer to other fathers, especially those trying to lead both at home and in the workplace?
It's back to knowing who you are. And I just don't think we do enough exploration in that. And if that's something I can help you with, please let me know. But there's so many things out there. Like, pick something to just try to know yourself better.
Yeah.
The best thing I ever did 10 years ago was started going to therapy and counseling. Generationally and as a man, like, that's not something that people value, and I'm like, I'm gonna own it. I needed it and it was super helpful, and I'm in it to this day, and it's so helpful for me to be called on when I'm doing something crazy and needs to fix, but also a place where I know I have safe spot to talk and say, this is how I encountered the situation. So it's been incredibly helpful. The reason I mentioned that is that helps me know who I am.
But that is key. This is a thing that has actually come out a lot in of your response, like creating spaces where men feel like they're able to, you know, navigate their issues, but also be able to express themselves without the fear of being condemned or looked at as less than.
Absolutely. And every culture has their stereotype of what the man should be.
Yeah.
Right. And that's around the world. It doesn't really matter. Like, can I go to a bar and get a fruity drink?
No.
Because men don't drink those, right?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I would never want that. But still, like, as from a cultural perspective, like, well, shoot, if you want a pink drink, go get a pink drink.
Yeah.
Like, make it happen. So it's knowing you and being comfortable with you.
Yeah. So as you go, let's talk a little bit about Abilene, right? Consulting.
Yeah.
What's the story behind the name? And can you tell people a little bit more about it and how they can find you?
Absolutely. So Abilene was founded in 2019. When I left the free clinic, I sat around and thought about what I wanted to do and decided I wanted to start a company where I could help others transform and really grow. And so I started Abilene. It is actually, the name comes from my wife and I created, mainly my wife, and it's a word blend of my two daughters, so Abigail and Madeline. So we blended those together to be Abilene. And so we've been going over 5 years now, strong, and work with teams, with individual clients, and help them transform the way they engage with others. And I know that sounds bold, but that's truly what we do. And I think most probably used almost all of my services.
All of it.
And the different components with her teams, with big teams, small teams, individual. So, but it's really just focused on the individual, helping to know who they are so that they know themselves, so they can lead themselves and they can lead others. And please don't get caught up on the word leadership.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have a formal position in leadership. And honestly, when we first started working together, you did not.
No.
I mean, at all.
And
so,
if a love that came after we started working together, yeah. almost as if I attracted someone, because I felt very liberated in a way. Like, I can do this. I can do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. But we all lead our, we all have to lead ourselves every day. So at, at the core, leadership is who we are and what we're doing, whether we have that formal position or not. Mm. So I have a small but mighty team. I have another coach that her name's Nicole that I work with, who's incredible. I have an executive assistant who is a do-it-all everything. Her name's Catherine, and wonderful on the team. And we try our best to meet every client where they are and help them get better by the time we're done. So you can find us on our website, abilineconsulting.com. There's all kinds of contact information there. Also just Abilene Consulting, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. We try to give as much updates as a small but mighty team can give, as we go. If you're thinking this is something that you might be interested in, would love to chat with you or chat with Mo, and she can tell you the goods and the bads, of what this looks like. 'Cause you're exactly right. There's a lot out there of this. And for me, I wanted it to be something tangible. I want you to leave transformed from when you came in. That's our goal. And it's not just, hey, I gave you the information, you need to go figure out what to do with it. We're going to help you through that process.
And I just want to say it works. I'm a living proof of that. It's why I keep referring. I brought Brandon to my university. How many, you've been to Oklahoma? Maybe like three or four times.
Yes. At least three. Yes.
Just in the past year alone. And I love him at the, I mean, I still work with him personally, as you know, we do have a one-on-one. I transitioned from the group based ones, like one-on-one. And we tested him out at the cancer center. They want to keep bringing him back because what he does is effective across board. And it's so life-changing. I mean, my only regret was that I didn't start sooner. But again, you have to get into the mess before you can get the message out of
it. So. That's it.
That's we need some material for the work.
Exactly. It did make it easier, right? I guess in a weird way.
It did.
And it's all industries. It really doesn't matter. I mean, I'm in healthcare, so I have a lot of healthcare clients, but I also have clients that aren't. It works everywhere.
Yeah. So we're going to put all of that in the show notes. If you want me to share a little bit more about my experience for anyone interested, just, you know, reach out to us and I'll be more than happy to make that introductions happen. I just want to say thank you so much, Brandon. Are there any things you'd like to maybe finalize or talk about before we send you off? 'Cause it's right on the hour. Okay.
Thanks for having me. And I'm so proud of you, Mo, for the work you're doing and your growth. It's awesome to see.
That means a lot from a pioneer. You just made my idea. I'm going to, you know, go put that up on the mantle somewhere, you know, because we never forget. Yeah. Thank you for not only coming on the podcast, but for all the work we've done together and for not only rescuing me from a difficult session of my life, but for modeling what it means to lead with integrity, with humility, and with heart. I feel like our conversation today is a reminder that leadership isn't just about performance, it's about presence, right? And much like fatherhood, much like, you know, leadership, it isn't about perfection, but also intention. So to all of our listeners out there, we hope that this episode reminds you to be inspired to lead better, to love deeper and show up more fully, both at home and at work. And to all the fathers and father figures out there, happy Father's Day. You matter more than you know. And so please reach out if you need more help from Brandon. We'll put the link to how to do your voices. It's mind-blowing stuff. You'll be like, oh my gosh, this makes sense. Why, if I tell my husband something, I feel like I've said it, but he's not listening to it. It really did help me with my students in class because my evaluations were really horrible, even though I was doing great. And I realized that half of the class was probably lost in how I delivered my content, or they felt I was, you know, I wasn't being communicative. So that has been very, very helpful for me. And so thanks so much, Brandon, and happy Father's Day. And I'll catch you on the other side of the mic.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to all of your listeners.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.